time.
Yep. Robert Anderson. No Robert Anderson here. Progressive Engineering, Southland Limited. Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you very much for your submission. I see Mr. McSorley, you've tabled some further information for us today. So perhaps you can introduce your colleague and then proceed to read that out to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're representing Progressive Engineering Southland Limited. This is Chris Hughes beside me. He's the managing director. So as you suggest, I'll read through my summary briefly. And then Mr. Hughes will make a comment.
Okay.
So some of the points I'm raising have been raised in other submissions, but as my client noted in their submission, on-farm infrastructure represents a significant monetary investment. And they submitted that a new policy recognising this should be included in the plan. The recommending report notes that there is specific guidance on this matter in Section 104.2A of the Act, and I acknowledge that the Consent Authority must have regard to the value of the investment of the existing consent holder under the section of the Act. But I don't think it precludes inclusion of the suggested policies. And I also note that while under that section of the Act, regard must be had to the value of the investment to the existing consent holder, the policy suggested by the submitter would recognise wider social and economic benefits and is not restricted to the value of the consent holder. This is an important distinction as farming activity in Southland has social and economic benefits at local, regional and national levels. In my opinion, consideration of the investment in on-farm infrastructure is appropriate at a policy level in the plan and would be consistent with Objective 2 and Objective 9B of the proposed plan. Inclusion of the policy will not override or trump any of the other policies. It would, however, provide for balanced consideration of social and economic values along with environmental and cultural when existing dairy farms apply for resource consent under the plan. Progressive Engineering also sought the addition of a new policy that recognises and provides for farmers who are operating efficiently and effectively environmentally. So the submission points sought a policy incentive for adoption of good or better than good management practices. In my opinion, policy recognition of good management practice through adoption of the policy or alternatively by an amendment to policy 40 would be useful. The suggested policy would provide a hook for farmers, a policy hook, to highlight good management practices they have developed and implemented on farm when applying for resource consents, including for replacement permits for dairy farm. Policy 39, the Chair earlier on spoke to that point, so I probably just won't repeat that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard a lot from planners and legal people about that over the course of the hearing. Rule 49 and 54 related to water permits, and Progressive made submissions around this. My understanding, for one of the reasons why it is proposed to lift the permitted water tank threshold, is that it's partly to avoid the costs associated with a high number of applications for relatively small takes. So I acknowledge there is a cost to both council and applicants from processing large numbers of consents for those water takes. However, as noted in my evidence, I do have concerns about the amount of water that could be abstracted and limited requirements to monitor and supply data on that amount of water from those takes. And that does appear to be perhaps contrary to some of the policy direction in the EPS, which is seeking that water is allocated and used efficiently. In my opinion, controlled activity status for water tanks of less than 86,000 cubic metres may represent a better approach. Controlled activity status will provide more certainty for farm abstractors, given they will hold a permit for their take. It also provides an incentive to the permit holder to monitor their take and ensure they are complying with their permit and being efficient in their use of water. It would also assist council in terms of ensuring accurate monitoring of water abstraction through the wider region. And given there are some uncertainties as the council moves into limit setting, accurate water takes within FMUs and FMU sub-catchments would seem to provide more certainty for all parties. And I think in the submission or in the evidence, we did note that those water take rules were based, I think, on a land holding. So in my mind, they seem quite permissive. And there's no sort of recognition of the size of that land holding. Moving on to Rule 32, effluent storage. So I've outlined some changes that I think would improve regulation of that. And there is an amended Rule 32 attached to as Appendix 1. The amended rule provides for a three-tiered approach whereby if the storage is controlled, we're professionally designed and supervised. Discretionary, where one or more of the permitted conditions cannot be met. And non-compliant, where it is not professionally designed and supervised. I guess part of the reasoning for that is it's not that uncommon for ponds to not meet one of the setbacks or the permitted conditions of that rule. In my experience, it's relatively common. So defaulting to non-complying just seems a bit extreme. Progressive Engineering in their submission discussed the sign-off process for agricultural storage ponds through the territorial building consent process. So there's a bit of an issue here, we think, because basically the construction of above-ground ponds is currently requires a building consent from the relevant TA.
Yeah.
In terms of the Southland District Council, which is the bulk of the rural area of Southland, they also have a rules around those farmed area effluent ponds in terms of setbacks. My understanding is that rule was put in as a sort of placeholder until the new plan was done. But that rule is still in place now, and we now have obviously new plans in the proposed water plan. So the effect is for above ground storage, if you didn't meet one of the setback requirements of the proposed water plan, the Southland District plan, and you would need a resource consent under both, plus you need a building consent under the Southland, from the Southland District Council Building Department. So I'm not sure it's a matter that obviously the panel can deal with in terms of what's in another council's district plan, but it's perhaps a point to note. And I have a question around, is there a need for three approval processes for those types of ponds? So that's probably brings a summary of my evidence concludes that, so I'll just pass over to Mr. Hughes to speak.
Good afternoon, gents. As you know, I'm the Managing Director of Progressive Engineering Southland. Progressive do dairy conversions with our clients. We supply, install and service milking equipment, effluent system, pumps, irrigation systems throughout Southland. We have a direct interest in the plan as a supplier of farm infrastructure and indirectly through our farming clients. We have submitted on various aspects of the plan, and as the submissions and hearing evidence has been pre-circulated and read, I won't read any of that today.
Thank you.
I would, however, be happy to answer any questions you may have, hopefully to provide any further clarification on anything from an industry perspective.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Just before I hand over to the rest of the panel, just three issues. Policy 40, the reporting officers recommended amending Clause 6 of Policy 40 in response to your submission. Are you satisfied with their recommendation?
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. Now, Rule 49, so I think you're probably the only submitter I've heard so far who's suggesting that rule is too permissive. So are you wanting any abstraction of water to be a consented activity? And if so, why? And I know you didn't submit on Rule 54, but only Rule 49, too, by the way.
So obviously the Act permits certainly
certain takes for domestic and
So apart from section 14, three takes. I mean, your submission sought the regulation of water takes for dairy activity as a controlled activity.
Yeah, well, I think the context for the, where I'm coming from, my opinion, is currently a water permit is linked to the discharge permit for an existing farm. So, in my mind, that works quite well in terms that they need to be replaced at the same time. So the matters relating to water and farm dairy effluent can be settled at the same time. Also, in terms of new conversions, obviously you have a bundle of consents, water permit, land use consent for the conversion, the pond, farm dairy effluent pond consent, and the discharge consent. When a conversion is proposed, in my mind, the water take is a key part of that process. The amount of water you take influences the amount of farm dairy effluent to be discharged. Mm-hmm. The other matters is there is a bit of uncertainty about where the plan's heading in terms of limit setting. So to my mind, there does seem to be a benefit for a farmer to hold that permit to a water permit to extract a certain volume of water. Obviously, if it becomes a permitted activity, I guess they could apply for a certificate of compliance, but you know, that's effectively the same thing as a resource consent. So I acknowledge it's an unusual submission point. And it also comes back, I guess, to the where things are heading with the NPS and generally with the water plan in terms of efficient use of water. In my mind, that implies quite detailed records of what water's being taken. So I don't know if the plan, as notified, assumes that every dairy farm has taken 86,000 litres. I think the recommendation is that there's a change that monitoring data is supplied. So that probably does address the concern to some extent.
Yeah.
But in terms of managing water efficiently, surely the better, the more detailed the records you have on that water abstraction, the better.
So I'm just trying to write down the relief you're seeking. So the submission sought the regulation of water takes for dairy activity as a controlled activity. And from what you've said verbally and then reading your evidence, I've written down, the submitter wants dairy farm takes to be controlled activities, and the reason for that is to link to discharge consents for conversions. So is that a correct summation of what you're asking for and the reasons? Because I'd struggle to understand the reasons.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
Okay. Now, Rule 32, we've had a large number of submissions on the same similar points that you were raising. A number of submitters, including Dairy Holdings Limited, suggested that if a building consent was required for the storage facility, then in terms of this council's regulatory process, there should be sign off by a certified chartered professional engineer, but where a building consent was not required, that could be undertaken by a suitably qualified person. Would that go some way to addressing your concerns if we were to view that relief favourably?
Well, it's suitably qualified, I guess.
Yeah, probably that's an answer.
Yeah, probably the question I'd have is what is suitably qualified?
Yeah, it would have to be a defined term. I understand that's. We had evidence from an earlier submitter, I can't remember his name, who said that those terms are really readily definable. So.
Yeah, well, I think
it captures the essence of what we're trying to achieve.
Okay.
Certainly, if there was some definition around suitably qualified, then I'm reasonably comfortable with that.
Okay. Right, we'll see if we have any other questions for you. Morris, we start at your end of the table.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to take your question a little bit further, the Section 42A report does address, I think, what you're asking there, and that it says that where the volume, this is an addition, where the volume is over 2,000 litres per day, they have to record what they're taking and provide that to the Regional Council on request. And in terms of the 86 cubic metres, that's 1 litre per second, that's inclusive of water that's taken for stock water and drinking water supplies as well. So that would take up, you know, depending on the size of the operation, many farms would probably use a fair bit of that anyway. So do those two additions ease your concerns a bit?
I think part of the original thinking in this submission and through the evidence was also the how it was linked to land holdings. But I acknowledge there have been changes that, to some extent, probably address some of the issues we raised.
Okay. All right, thanks. On the application of EFRONT, you say that you should use the average depth rather than the maximum depth. And a few other people have said this as well, but I wonder how you can measure the average depth, and wouldn't that allow, say, an area of excessive application and an area of low application to be averaged out, and that could cause a problem where it was too heavily applied?
I can take this.
Yeah.
So the average depth, from an industry perspective, a lot of the irrigators, the pods and things like that that are manufactured by people other than Progressive, we'll talk about averages, because obviously when you've got a centre and something spinning, you may get a little bit more in the centre and a little bit less on the outside, depending on the condition of the said irrigator. Mm. So as an average, is the way that the industry's looked at it for a number of years. It's also used by QCONS, now Quality Consultants of New Zealand, have brought out a scheme for an effort more on a fitness, of which there are a number of people throughout New Zealand who are credited to go on farm and test these irrigators and have a look at their systems. They use the term average. DairyNZ also uses it as part of their effluent irrigation calculators and in their design standards document as well. So there's quite a number of variables that can, I guess, hit the irrigator to get an exact maximum. So an average has been, it's an industry standard way of looking at it for a number of years.
So that is more normal than using maximum.
Correct, yeah.
All right. And regarding the application of effluent, should that be limited by soil temperature as well as soil moisture or field capacity?
In my opinion, it should be linked to, I'm not a soil scientist whatsoever, but I believe it should be linked to temperature and field moisture. What that temperature is, I don't know, but I think it should be linked to the two somehow.
Yeah, the ES sites have a temperature, they say 5 degrees in the autumn and 7 degrees in the spring, so that's what they recommend.
Yes. Yep, definitely linked to field moisture as well.
Right, yeah. Okay. No, I think that's all. Thanks very much. It's been very good.
Anything else?
No questions, Gary?
Not for me, thanks.
And Lloyd, anything else?
Just one thing, you raised the point around above ground storage, and I have one, so I understand what you're saying, because the different agencies fight over the PS 1, 2, 3, 4 and who's going to sign off and is it engineered correctly. Do you actually have a way that can actually be streamlined? Because I understand in-ground storage facilities line, that seems to be easier. But when you go above ground, there seems to be a conflict of professionals. How have you found that, and is there a way forward that you think would be a better way to address that? Because you get into agency, no one will sign off until the other person signs off.
Correct, yeah. And a lot of it is to do around the base design as well.
Yes.
So a lot of the tank manufacturers will give you the specific strengths and I guess engineering requirements for their tank, but they say it's subject to the base, but they make the base somebody else's problem. So the way I see it, they don't do a turnkey approach. They'll say, well, let's get a digger driver in to prepare a base. I'll say, now let's get somebody such as Progressive going to put a tank up, then we get somebody such as Opus to oversee the lot and sign it off. To me, there's no cohesion. So there needs to be, I think, the manufacturers get together with the engineers and come up with a specific standard and way of doing these above ground tanks. Because there's not a lot of cohesion with them at the moment.
In regard to that, is there a way, and I'm suggesting there could be a way through this plan to actually help streamline that, because I can appreciate where you're coming from as one of the people of the process. and you rely on anybody else to do their job correctly. The Environment Southland's actually looking with certainty that what was put up was actually going to do the job it actually was designed to do.
Yeah, well, that's going to come back to the structural integrity of the structure, I guess, which comes back to people like Scopus and engineers who designed and signed that off. So it's going to have to take somebody to oversee the entire project, such as an in-ground pond build, so that we have got certainty from the ground that it's going on is can take the weight, I guess, the structural ability, is that the right word? Structural integrity of the land is good, then the base that's on top of it is integral as well as the... as well as the tank construction itself. So there's a lot of points in there, like, again, we're equipment suppliers and engineers and stakers and things like that, so we'll do our bit, but we require somebody to oversee the entire project, and it needs to be right from the start to finish. So yeah, a bit of geotech would need to be done to make sure that the land is, you know, has got the structural integrity required. That sort of goes somewhere answering your question.
Yeah, well, you've highlighted the problems that a number seem to have. In actual fact, the reason that they go for above ground storage is because they've got problems either with clay or with water table as they go down, and they're saying, let's put up for a whole lot of reasons, and above ground storage, whether it's there's been a number of brands of those around. So it's about making sure that process, at the end of the day, is about holding effluent to a point where you can discharge it safely to land. Yeah. So it's a holding tank for a period of time.
Correct. Yeah, and the way I see it, you can get sign-off from the tank manufacturers, such as Tasman Clip Tank, people like that, for the structure, but that's not signing off the entire, I guess, finished product, including the land and the slab or the soil or the sand that goes down underneath it. So that's where I guess the problem is, and you're right, it needs to have a more of a one-stop approach for somebody to take over the entire design, build, commission, and test.
So picking up on the chairman's point, is a suitable qualified person, in your view, able to do it, or do you need some sort of engineer to actually give confidence to the consent, I suppose, that everything that's said to be done has been done properly and we avoid an environmental effect?
I'm going to throw Luke on the bus on this one, but I'm going to give my 2 cents worth what it's worth. You're talking here geotech, which isn't progressive. You're talking structural base, with the penetrometer going around at different points and testing that, which isn't progressive, may not be Opus. You're looking at the tank manufacture, which is progressive, or sorry, the assembly, but then you're looking at everything else as well, from the inlets, outlets, what's going on with that tank. So, yeah, a suitably qualified person, there are people around that could do that, and someone like, say, maybe Opus, could certainly manage the process along with somebody likes a progressive or a water force or somebody like that to ensure that the build is done correct as well. It's no different than doing an effluent system now through the DMNZ code of practice, where we don't get involved with the consent side or the pond, but we get involved in the machinery and the irrigation side of it. So it's a bit of a two-step approach, but we work together to achieve that.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chair, I think the only thing I'm aware of is that there is a difference between a suitably qualified and chartered professional engineer.
Yeah.
Obviously you've heard submissions to that effect, and I'm aware that a colleague of mine did a memorandum which is part of the section 32A assessment documents, so I think that I've read that, and that probably provides a succinct sort of summary around those issues between suitably qualified and CPENG, so I'd probably fall back on that. I don't know if I should add any more, but do you want to comment? There have been issues on ponds. Just leave it there.
I think we probably had a reasonable discussion of the issue now.
Yep.
It's not actually related to a particular question. So.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, and I have no further questions. Thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. We now adjourn until 11th of September at 10 a.m.
Thank you.
Thank you.